when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Breaking and entering, drunk and disorderly, law and order. A former prosecutor and a defense lawyer, not your typical pairing. And the result? Conversations about crime and punishment that are guaranteed to get you thinking.
Welcome to Justice Matters with Joe Crowley and Lizzie Green, a brand new weekly podcast. Our episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Check out our Instagram for clips at Justice Matters Pod. Enjoy the episode. This episode contains descriptions of violence. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, Lizzie.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
I am good, and I'm excited about today.
Good. Well, I'm excited about today because we get to talk about something that I am interested in, which is sport, boxing, yes. MMA, and its relationship to, well, criminal law, but also just law generally in terms of what you can consent to in terms of violence. So a big shout out to my mate Simon, who is a avid listener of our podcast, who said that I should do a podcast on MMA.
Which I had to ask you what that was.
Yes. Mixed martial arts.
Something you are proficient in?
Absolutely not. No, I wouldn't last 2 seconds in an MMA ring. But I, you know, the benefits of modern technology. So when I'm looking at my phone and scrolling, the algorithm has picked up that I watch clips of MMA and boxing. And so I regularly see the clips, which are generally the knockouts in an MMA fight and the knockouts in boxing.
So I really am not at all across that type of sport.
It's not coming up in your feed?
Not so much, although my husband has completely ruined my algorithm and I get a lot of four-wheel drives camping equipment. So
I'm up for that. I reckon that's great.
Anyway, but so, look, I do know what boxing entails.
Yes.
But so what's the difference between boxing and MMA and, you know, what's the other one, WWF
World
or whatever?
Wrestling Federation. Well, again, not an expert at WWF, but I and probably WWF supporters are going to be angry at me to say this, but that is theatre, I think, in terms of the fights are very staged.
Or orchestrated.
Orchestrated is the word, yes. So boxing, as you know, two people standing in a ring punching each other, wearing gloves, and quite strict rules around what they can and can't do. Mixed martial arts. So in the 1960s and then into the 70s, people, you know, with the emergence of different martial arts, karate, judo, you know, jiu-jitsu, and obviously boxing. So there was some, obviously, I'm sure boys sitting around going, I wonder who'd win a karate fighter or a judo fighter. So they started to do these kind of fights.
Right.
You know, cut to the 90s and that becomes an organized thing where they have mixed martial arts where you get into a ring, which is more like a cage. It's got very high walls on it, not like a boxing ring, which just has the sort of the three ropes around, you know, in a square. Broadly speaking, you can fight in any style you like.
So this isn't cage fighting.
Well, it's well, I suppose it's a form of cage fighting. Okay. Yeah.
So I just keep thinking of Ross from Friends. He calls it karate. And says he had unagi.
Right.
So now that's, but that was 90s. So obviously it was quite the thing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up with the original Karate Kid, not the remake, which was one of my favorite films. Yeah, wax on, wax off.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Got it.
So, but when my friend says to this, oh, you should do a show, he's a lawyer as well. So when you do a show, you should do one on MMA. I knew instantly what he was talking about. And that is this idea that I see in my feed when there are two people fighting. One of them gets knocked out and is clearly knocked out. Like as they are falling, they are unconscious, and it is self-evident that they are unconscious. And they hit the canvas in the ring, and their opponent jumps on them and continues to punch them. And it just horrifies me every time I see it, because the person is unconscious and they are still being pounded.
So why are they doing that? Do they not win when there's enough?
Well, let me unpack. I want to unpack all of that.
Okay. Because if you are knocked unconscious in boxing,
yes,
hasn't the other person won?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm not talking about winning. It has something to do with winning. But in boxing, there's very strict rules about when a person is knocked to the canvas, what the other opponent has to do.
They have
to go to their corner. There's the 10 count or the 8 count. Yeah. So, but that got me thinking about an area which I've always been interested in, which is this idea of what exactly are you consenting to when you are going on and playing sport. So hopefully we'll look at a couple of other sports. Ice hockey, there's an interesting example from rugby union, which was the sport I played. And I think we're looking at there's a basketball game I was going to raise as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought what we should do is pair it back and let's start with first principles, because people listening to this might not know exactly what we talk about when we talk about consent to assault. The law is, the common law has always protected bodily integrity. So, I mean, I'm sure people have heard the idea a person's home is their castle, and understand, you know, sort of implicitly that the common law protects your right to your own house, you know, and people can't come into your house. And that's, again, an ancient principle of our laws. Similar to that, and just as ancient, is this idea of bodily integrity. But we don't sort of talk about it as much, probably because there's no nice little aphorism to sum it up. But I think people intuitively know you can't go around touching other people. And, you know, certainly that's taught a lot in schools now, particularly around sexual assault and things like that. And so courts have said that that is a very, very important thing that the law protects. And they make a blanket rule, any touching of another person is an assault. So at law, any touching of another person is an assault. And so people might be surprised to hear that, but you and I know as lawyers although that's the general rule, there are exceptions, if you like, or there's ways to look at that which mean, you know, you're not constantly suing every single person who you bump into.
And sorry.
Yeah.
It might be implicit in what you're saying, but it's any touching without consent.
Ah, so yeah, I was going to add that.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're right. I was going to add that in. So touching without consent. So obviously if you are putting your arm around your you know, wife or husband or partner, or that is a touching which, you know, people like. You hold hands. I hold hands with my 7-year-old son. He loves holding hands. And so I hold hands with him all the time. So that's a touching, but it's obviously something that's done with consent. So the law recognizes that you can consent. Now, consent can be expressed. So, you know, can you please hold my hand? Are you expressly consenting to it? But mostly in human relations, consent is implied. So you don't actually say anything. So my son never says, can I hold your hand, Dad? And I say yes, or I never say it to him. We just end up holding hands as we walk along. So that's an implied consent. And consent can be implied based on what you do. So you go to, you know, the pub, you go to a music concert, Taylor Swift maybe, and you're in the mosh pit, and you are bumped and jostled by people, you know, and you can't, you know, complain and, you know, go and sue them for just ordinary sort of bumping, jostling, rubbing past people, because there's an implied consent that if you are going to a pub, if you are walking along a busy street, if you are, you know, at a, in the mosh pit at a concert, you are impliedly consenting to a level of touching.
Yeah.
But you've got to understand, and it's all about, well, what is reasonably expected? So if you're at a concert and you are sitting up the back, you're not expected to be jostled the way you would be if you're in the mosh pit. I mean, if you're, I must have never been in a mosh pit, but I.
Never.
Never.
Joe.
Have you been in a mosh pit?
Oh, hundreds of times.
Wow. Okay.
Did you never go to Big Day Out or Livid or?
Look, I wasn't a big one for concerts, but if I did, I always, I just love the music. I'm just at the back just absorbing the music.
Loved a good festival.
Did you? Yeah. Okay. So, you, I mean, in a mosh pit, if you got elbowed in the face, would you be surprised?
No.
No. If you got kicked in the face, would you be surprised?
In a mosh pit?
Yeah.
Possibly not.
Yeah, because as you have these people who are sort of stage diving or whatever.
People's shoulders. Or,
yeah. So you know, if you go into a mosh pit and that happens, you know, you could appreciate that if you then got kicked in the face and went and complained to the police officer who's at the festival, they might say,
well, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, you know, you sort of consented to that.
Yeah. I know, because obviously I teach this as well, but the way they refer to it at law is, you are impliedly consenting to the everyday intercourse of life.
Yes, everyday intercourse of life.
And it's just a common sense kind of standard.
Yeah. So the everyday intercourse of life doesn't cover somebody walking up and punching you in the face, for example.
Mm.
Hence that being a you know, an assault that will end up in sort of criminal charges.
Yeah.
But the law also recognises that there is a level of assault that you can't consent to. So you raised that bizarre case, you know, in one of our episodes where a man asked his friend to cut off his leg and that involved him cutting through the guy's thigh, wasn't it?
I think so. And, in fact, I should say I've had there's been a bit of commentary about that, and I should recognise that that person involved did have mental health issues, which I did not address. So I do take that on board.
Okay. I mean, mental health issues adds a different dimension again to consent, but you can't consent to a certain level of injury. The question then becomes, well, what level of injury can you consent to?
Yes.
You know, if you're playing a game of sport and somebody stabs you, I mean, unless it's fencing, you know, you're probably going to be within your rights to say, well, I wasn't consenting to that. And there was a case with in a basketball game in the United States where one of the players pulled out a knife and stabbed to death. On the court, another player. Yeah.
What?
And that is way beyond.
Did they have personal beef?
I didn't get the backstory.
Or was it just that they were losing?
I don't know.
It's insane.
It's insane. So beyond the rules of the game. But
oh my God.
But I wanted to just briefly talk about the case of the Queen of Grants Brown, which we talked about before we went away, and I can't believe you hadn't heard of it.
No.
Because it is a salacious case.
Yeah, I think everyone brace yourselves.
For this salacious case. So it's an English case in 1994, Queen Against Brown. What had happened was there was a police investigation on an unrelated matter. But somehow the police end up raiding this house in London where there was sadomasochistic sex going on. There were five men who were engaging in sadomasochistic sex. So sadomasochism, inflicting pain on others and or receiving pain, and that being some kind of that sexually exciting you.
But they all chose to be there.
So it wasn't that anybody was abducted or being tortured. They all were voluntarily there and were voluntarily, I think,
participating.
And they must have, because they were all charged, they must have been both giving pain in terms of what they were doing as well as receiving it. So some of the behaviour included nailing penises and scrotums to wood.
You said this before.
Yes.
But so they would nail them.
Yes.
But then obviously.
Well, at some point, presumably you have to take the nails out. Yeah.
Good God.
Yes.
Okay.
Dripping hot wax onto genitals.
Oh, onto genitals. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all charged. They're all prosecuted.
And against each other.
Against each other, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they all argue, well, we were all consenting. So it's a consensual assault, which means it's not a crime. You can't charge us. And they were charged with what we would call in Queensland assault occasioning bodily harm. So the injuries that were done were injuries that would sort of heal.
You're telling me that nailing a penis to wood does not result in permanent injury.
Does not result in permanent injury. I don't know. I haven't tested that theory. But I don't think there was any medical dispute about that.
That is... All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
they took a chance. Well,
it's like nailing
a
sponge to a piece of wood. You know, it's a
speak for yourself. The sponge.
Male penis is quite resilient. You'd be surprised. anyway, so it goes to the house. It goes on appeal. They're convicted. It goes all the way up to the House of Lords, and the House of Lords then has to consider this question about to what level of consent injury can you consent to? And they, although they ruled by majority that you couldn't consent to this sadomasochistic sex, they did acknowledge you can consent to bodily harm. So injuries that are caused which don't leave sort of permanent damage. And I think because it was in 1994, some of the reasoning, you know, is a bit moralistic.
Mm.
And so that if that case was decided now, I suspect that the sadomasochistic sex would be allowed. Anyway, so then we can consent to bodily harm. So for people like me who played rugby union, you know, you are going to get bodily harm on a rugby union pitch. It is a full contact sport, and you are, you know, running, you know, you're trying to pull people down when they're running as fast as they can. I mean, if they're lying on top of the ball, you are entitled to ruck them, i.e. use the cleats on the bottom of your boot to ruck at the ball, and if you get them in the process, that's just part of the game.
So I think maybe we should just define bodily harm.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Yes. So bodily harm is any bodily injury which interferes with health or comfort.
Yes.
And so what that has been held to mean is, A, it has to be visible. So you have to be able to identify an injury somewhere. Bruise, black eye,
yes,
blood nose, broken rib, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But it also has to be something that interferes with health or comfort. So you must have a sensation of pain, usually, along with. So if you just got a bruise and you didn't know where you got it, that's not bodily harm necessarily. It doesn't cause you pain.
What about a slap in the face that leaves a red mark?
Well, I mean, if you quickly took a photo of the red mark, you could probably allege.
Mm. But then that runs all the way up to broken arms.
Broken arms.
Broken fingers.
Like broken
nose,
ribs. Because, you know, there's no way to fix it. You just got to let it heal.
Yeah.
So it's a huge spectrum of injuries that fall under bodily harm.
Yeah. So when you're playing rugby, you are, you know, you are potentially getting bruises, ruck marks. So, you know, sort of like welts or scraping down
cuts.
Your back. Oh, absolutely. Cuts, yeah. So I got stitches of... Somebody, accidentally need me in the head, split my eye open up here.
Does rugby union have the metal ones?
The metal cleats on the bottom of your boot. Oh, they did back in my day. Nowadays they've got these
plastic.
Sort of plastic blade type things or something. I haven't
just got the little spikes in league.
The plastic sort of knobble spikes, yeah. So, but I mean, there's full contact sports like rugby union. Then there's sort of partial contact, if you like, which is like soccer. So you can jostle for the ball, you can push people, you can tackle, which they define as tackle as sort of trying to get the ball off someone and your legs clash. And I mean, to that extent, they wear protective gear on their shin pad. Yeah.
What about netball?
Netball, again, partial contact, because the idea that you're going to run into somebody is...
There's some serious injuries on a netball court.
Yeah. Whereas non-contact sports are things like tennis. You know, you're never going to run into somebody in tennis.
No.
I suppose unless you're playing doubles, you know, or...
and not playing very well.
You know, I'm just trying to think of some other non-contact sports. Swimming, golf.
Yeah.
Although I suppose at golf, it's non-contact, but if you got hit in the head with a golf ball,
there's potential for harm, but so with tennis.
Yeah.
But it's not contact.
So, you know, what are you consenting to when you go on the field? Now... This is a bit of a grey area, because obviously you are consenting to whatever's within the rules of the game.
Mm.
So in rugby union, you're consenting to being tackled. That's within the rules of the game, provided it's a legal tackle. You know, if you are in boxing, you are consenting to being punched in the face. So the question then is, what about things that are outside the rules of the game but you could probably expect would happen? So, for example, being punched in a game of rugby union. You know, I, depending on the circumstances, I think it's that's something you are impliedly consenting. It's beyond the rules of the game, but it happens so often that you could reasonably expect that it's going to happen.
Okay. What about the fact that if that does happen and it's caught by the ref, that player gets sent off?
Sent off. Well, I, as I said, I think when you're consenting to things, it's not just whatever's within the rules of the game. It's what it's things that are outside the rules of the game but are, you know, reasonably, you know, reasonably expected.
So you think you would argue punching, consent to a punch on a football field?
Punching in football, rugby league, rugby union happens regularly.
Yeah, but does that equal consenting to it though?
You're running on the football field. I mean, what, wow. You're impliedly consenting. I've been punched in football. I didn't raise any complaint.
Did you start it?
No, never started.
I just see, I mean, my boys play.
Yeah.
And there are occasions, obviously, where things get a little heated out there and people will start to punch on. But it gets shut down really quickly. And doesn't seem to be, like, it always takes me, because I was the first aid officer and it terrified me that I'd have to deal with a proper injury. But it was never something that I was like, oh, yeah, another punch. I'd be like, oh, my God. You know, because I never expected it to descend into that.
Yeah. But, I mean, nobody's calling the police. You'd be surprised if one of the parents picked 100%. Up the phone.
Yeah, one's calling the police.
Isn't that the test? You know, it's a consensual assault.
Is that the test? Is it that we are just conditioned to say, that's rugby, rather than let's think about what are you actually consenting to?
Well, so I do think things change over time. And so anybody like me who likes to go back and watch clips from sports from the 70s and 80s, you know, if you watch a rugby union game or a rugby league game from the 70s and 80s, the just the level of violence in terms of fights, much higher than now.
Really?
Oh, so much higher.
Oh, well, that's good.
You know, and so we as a society are more sensitive to that, and particularly in you know, in sports, school sports.
Yeah, genius.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do think that we move in that direction, that we're less and less inclined to put up with that kind of violence. But, you know, and that might explain some of the cases that I might talk about, the ice hockey case in terms of criminal outcomes. Charges. Mm. Yeah. There's this idea that you were impliedly consenting to something, and you are impliedly consenting to something beyond the rules. I mean, if we think of water polo, I mean, I never played water polo, but my daughter did, and she was quite good, and she said the level of violence under the water is phenomenal.
Crazy. My nieces all play it, and my nephew, and the stories are out of control.
Out of control, yeah. And so if you're swimming out into a water polo, you know, pool, you are impliedly consenting to that kind of level of scratching and pinching and
kicking.
I mean, so I sit on a disciplinary panel for touch football, and touch football there is obviously provided for in the rules, direct contact. You touch a person to, they then stop and play the ball under their foot. And that includes, although people could be disciplined for it, you don't see it that often, what are called slap touches. So you are touching them really hard. Or scratch touches, or what's happened to two of my daughters that have played, throat touches, two fingers into the throat.
Well, my son plays, so he's still only 16, but he plays in an open competition. So he plays against grown men who actually get super annoyed when this team of young guys beat them.
Yep. Young, fit boys. Yeah.
And in one of the games last year towards the end, maybe a semi or even the grand final, a big bloke did a two-handed touch on one of our better players who is little but so speedy.
Yeah.
And he literally went flying.
Yes.
And, of course, no one's like, oh, call the police, but.
But was there even a penalty for it? I mean, I've seen that where there's
there
not
was
even
there in was in that case. Okay. It was really bad. But you're right, like it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's this level of implied consent you give when you go out there to things beyond the rules of the game. But then we get to things like MMA, where you are. I'm not an expert. I just watch these TikToks which come up in my feed regularly, and it seems to happen regularly, or certainly if my feed's anything I bought, that people will be unconscious and they will still be being punched. Now, that I just don't understand in a legal sense how that can occur, because people who are unconscious cannot consent. As soon as they are unconscious, all bets are off in terms of consent. And we know that from our laws about rape and sexual assault.
Yeah.
If there is a female who is unconscious.
Or a male,
they are not consenting. No matter what they've been doing before that.
That's right.
They are not consenting.
It ends with the lack of consciousness.
Correct. So this is what I just can't understand. So
yeah, why?
Well, let try and unpack it again. Not an expert, let me unpack it as far as I understand it. So I talked to a mate of mine who was a former amateur boxer, and so he knows, and he had some dealings in MMA.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And he said it might have something to do with, as you twigged to earlier on, the idea of how, you know, in terms of trying to win, you know, what do they need to do to win? So
kill them.
Well, one would, it seems so sometimes, I think. But no, so it's similar to boxing in that once a person is unconscious, you've won, and or they tap out. Because it's mixed martial arts, there's often grappling and wrestling involved, because you can sort of do anything. So if you're wrestling somebody and they, you know, tap you, you know, they do the tap, then they have agreed that they've lost. And then,
Can I just ask a question? So MMA.
Yes.
Does everyone have the same mixed martial art experience, or can some people just be doing like jiu-jitsu and other people doing a combination? Do you know?
You can do whatever you like.
You don't necessarily have the same skills?
No.
Okay.
But what seems to have happened is that, you know, it finds its level, and that everybody sort of starts to understand what are the grapples that work and don't work. Right. If you watch it, you wouldn't go, well, that's a jiu-jitsu and that's a karate. You know, okay. You just go, there's two guys fighting, and
oh, it's become its own type of.
Yeah, in some senses. Okay. But it has this interesting element of wrestling with it, so that, you know, it's not just punching and kicking. You know, it's like kickboxing in that sense, but it's then also wrestling, so that once they get in, they can get each other in a hold. And potentially, you know, subdue the person through a wrestling move. So my friend says, well, what happens in an economic sense is these fighters are signed to a 3 or 4 fight deal. You only do 3 or 4 fights in a year. They're so hard on the body that you're not doing any more than that. You're paid about $20,000 a fight. So if you're doing 3 fights in a year, $20,000, you know, that's practically below the poverty line when you take tax out. Mm. And in terms of the amount you have to train and the diet that you have to have, you know, you're not making a lot of money. So they need another contract or a better contract. Mm. Now you get bonus for knockout, and you apparently get a bonus for some kind of special, interesting knockout, presumably because it goes on TikTok and people like me watch it and you get millions of views.
Well, I want to know what that is.
Sorry?
I want to know what that is.
Well, it's some kind of knockout that's really interesting, I suppose. So one of the other, and this is what my friend said, in terms of why is it you are bashing somebody on the ground who is potentially unconscious? Mm. And he said, well, the difference between boxing and MMA is that the fight can turn on a dime, in the sense that the chance of a sort of a lucky punch or kick changing the dynamic of who's winning in an instant is much higher. So in boxing, you have much thicker gloves and you are standing, you know, facing the other person and you have your guard up and you punch. And that's it. There's no kicking, you know, there's no wrestling. And so in that sense, it's much more restricted in the way that you can knock somebody out. And so the chance of a sort of a lucky punch getting through and you just dropping somebody when you're on the ropes is much lower, apparently, in boxing than it is in MMA, where a whole you can, well, you've got much thinner gloves. And so your punch, the likelihood of your punch knocking somebody out is higher. You know, you can see these TikToks where you see somebody and they're getting absolutely pummeled and then out of nowhere a punch lands and the other guy's knocked out.
Right.
So my friend says he thinks that it is a function of this idea that they need to get a knockout, they need to get an interesting knockout, they need to get a further contract, that they need that person to be unconscious. So when they're falling, they make no, they're not going to leave anything to chance that this guy might hit the canvas and get back up again.
Wow.
They absolutely pummel. Now, my friend who knows more about it than I says that, and you do see this, the referees, they don't sort of stand there. They do try and jump in and they sometimes seem to take their time jumping in. But, you know, they often dive in and, you know, when somebody's clearly right,
so
unconscious.
It's not part of the game.
Well, is it part of, I mean, even if
putting
it's not part of the rules.
Putting aside the question of consent, they're not meant to do that.
Well, the game's over once the person's unconscious. Whether the person's unconscious or not, you know, might be a question. Well, presumably it's always a question for the referee. I mean, if somebody's tapping out, that's pretty obvious. Everybody knows.
But they might justify it by saying, I wasn't sure he was unconscious.
Yeah.
Saw the eyelid flicker.
Sure, yeah. But, I mean, when you see, yeah, I mean, when somebody gets hit in the jaw, it's quite obvious they are unconscious when they are falling. I mean, they fall.
You can see
the
eyes go.
Yeah,
well.
But often they just go completely stiff and they just drop, you know. So, you know, so I just, you know, I'm just mind blown that this kind of stuff.
And so no one has been charged for that kind of conduct?
Not as far as I can see. People have died in MMA, but, oh, yeah.
From doing that?
Oh, well, if you look at the list of them, some people die in the ring. Occasionally people die, but often they die later on that day or, you know, yeah. But, I mean, look, that's not, I mean, people die from boxing, people die from rugby union.
Well, I know. I the only stuff I know about boxing, and I feel like I know quite a lot, was because of the novel The Power of One.
Oh, okay.
Which
I didn't see that
Bryce
coming.
Courtney.
Yes, I loved it.
God.
Great novel. Yeah, I loved it.
PK does all of the boxing.
That's right. He's a boxer.
Described it all. Yes. So I felt like I knew quite a lot about boxing as a result of that. And I thought that was violent and too much for my...
Really?
Yes.
You're young. When were you? Just sort of a year 12 or something reading?
No, younger than that. I think I read it in grade 8.
Grade 8?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
I was a reader. Am a reader.
Yeah.
But this is just shocking to me that people would subject themselves to this kind of risk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose people do lots of things from, I mean, base jumping. I just look at that and think, why would you ever even, anyway. Yeah. So.
But because you can't control your opposition in that ring. You know, like you're, if you're in a ring where the rules are loose, the risk that you're going to be.
Yeah. Well, I suspect that the MMA people say the rules aren't loose. And if you look at the rules, there are quite a lot of them, unbelievably. But you sort of think, well, you even need to write those down. Aren't they self-evident? So you can't attack the groin. You can't bite. You can't spit. You can't punch somebody in the spine. You can't do a rabbit punch, which is a punch to the back or the kidneys. You can't punch to the neck.
Head?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Punch the head. Absolutely.
So why do they distinguish between the neck and the head?
I don't know. Well, so I did see a rule saying you can't punch the back of the head, but I see so many where people are in a particular hold and they're pounding the back of the other head's person, the back of the other person's head, you know, which is just phenomenal. Because, I mean, in boxing, which is very strict, same rules, but very strict in terms of punching in the back of the head, that is absolutely not on.
Remember that guy who bit the...
Yeah. So that was Evander Holyfield had his ear bitten off.
Yeah.
By
But that was not allowed.
Not allowed, correct. And that was, I mean, the fight was called off straight after that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, he is being bitten off as, again, something that happens in rugby union. Not often, but.
No.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not recent. But I think it was somebody had their ear bitten off in a test match, rugby union test match, yeah.
A little bit not related, but remember Hopper Whitey, who.
Okay, there's an
his thumb up.
Was it a? It was certainly some kind of a finger.
Well, a digit.
Or digit.
Up the bottom of.
Three players in a NRL game. It was actually only in one game. I went and looked it up because I remember it. It was one game against the North Queensland Cowboys. I can't remember who he played for.
I don't know.
And he in a tackle would
pop a finger in.
Insert a finger into the anus of the other player. It happened to three players.
Was that just like a distraction technique? Was that what he was trying to do?
He said he was trying to give him a wedgie. I don't know if anyone followed that up with why were you trying to give him a wedgie, but.
Not the time or the place.
Yeah. And he was convicted.
Yeah.
Not with a criminal offence. He was, because that's a rape, a digital penetration of the anus.
I don't think it was back then.
No, 2001, I think it was.
Oh, was that 2001?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he was unprofessional. Unsportsmanlike conduct, 12-week ban, and just ruined his reputation. I mean, if you say Hopper Whitey, everybody
knows
who.
That's all you think of.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of his nephews is a current player.
So you wouldn't be consenting to that kind of contact?
Absolutely not. No. So far beyond the rules of the game.
Mm. Anyway, back to MMA.
Yeah. Well, you know, so they do have these list of rules. And, you know, there's some funny rules about elbowing. So, I mean, you can elbow in MMA, which is just absolutely not on in boxing at all. And again, that's one of the other reasons why the fight can turn on a dime, because, you know, the use of an elbow is, I think, much more likely to cause a knockout than a fist, particularly when they've got gloves on, although the gloves are pretty thin in MMA.
So I guess my question is, like, boxing, there are all of these rules and restrictions, but it's a free-for-all. Like, is it still a skill that will get you to win, or is it this getting an elbow in and knocking them out? You know,
well,
like,
I think getting an elbow in is a skill. I mean, there's an enormous level of skill in what they do. It's just incredibly violent. I mean, it is the most full-on contact sport I think you could have.
And so you say that they win if they're unconscious.
Or they tap out.
So these ones where they're still punching them when they're unconscious – once the ref gets to them.
Yeah, and it calls it off. Dives in between them.
So it doesn't stop them from winning that they were punching them unconscious?
No. Oh, they're not. No, they don't seem to be disciplined for it at all. And it's like, boom, okay, you've won, even though you punched the guy seven times after he was unconscious.
And there's no ban on.
Well, again.
Sorry, on, I think, strictly it's further competitions. You know, like,
no,
you get benched
in
footy.
I don't think so. These people, that's a win.
Mm.
You know, which is, I think, bizarre.
It is bizarre. I mean, I think the other sport that is super violent is ice hockey.
I was getting to ice hockey. Why do you think it's super violent?
Well, because we have a lot of Canadian students at my uni.
Yes.
And they talk about sport. I actually had someone write me an email on Monday. Dear Liz, just letting you know, I'm not coming to class today because I'm watching the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, okay. But so, you know, we talk about sport.
Yes.
And they tell me stories of people who've had, like, slices and gashes and unconscious. And I think there was a death.
There was a death. I might get to that. But one of the things, and ice hockey, I think, is a good example of this idea of what are you consenting to? Because fighting, as I understand it, and I'm not an expert in ice hockey, is beyond the rules of the game. But it is such a part of the culture that the referees will actually stop the game and let two players take off their gloves and punch on in the middle of the ice hockey ring, you know, to sort of, I don't know, settle some kind of dispute. But so if you are going onto an ice hockey rink, you are impliedly consenting to a pretty high level of violence, it seems to me, you know, which is just, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah, they tell me on this happened in this game and, you know, they're laughing about it. And all I'm thinking of was, well, if they needed stitches, then that was a wound and you can't consent to a wound. So
yeah.
That's where I'm going with it. Why is someone not being charged? But no one, well.
Well, I suppose wounds, so breaking of the skin where you need stitches, I mean, that happens in rugby union, rugby league, I mean, boxing.
Split your head and
stuff. And, Well, I suppose it's certainly in ice hockey, it would probably, I would have thought, mostly be an accident.
I think that's part of the time it is. Yeah.
Because obviously in ice hockey they're using, they've got their sticks.
And the puck.
And the puck.
And just the ice itself. And the skates.
Yeah, and the skates. So last year in England, I didn't know there were big ice hockey players, but there was an ice hockey game there between two clubs, and it was sort of the top level A grade, whatever game, and the two clubs I think were the biggest clubs and biggest rivals. And a young American who was playing over there had his throat cut open by the boots of an opponent and bled to death.
Oh, he died.
I think he was declared dead at the hospital, but he bled out and died. And it's hard to get details on exactly what happened, and I don't want to sound, like I'm gruesome and, really interested in these gory details. But from a legal point of view, you do want to know exactly what happened so that you can assess the legal consequences. So the articles on it talked about it as the opening articles, when it first happened in I think it was August last year, they're talking about this terrible, tragic accident and how, it was unforeseen effectively, absolute, who could have predicted it kind of accident. And obviously terrible for a young man to die and his family, obviously. And apparently he was a great club man and everyone around the club loved him. And so, there's all of that and all of the outpouring of grief. But subsequently, the player whose boots slashed his throat open was charged and has been charged with manslaughter, which I think is...
What do we know?
Well, I know. I'm reading this media report, so obviously they're not answering the kind of questions lawyers ask. Mm. But I just don't understand how that... I mean, it's self-evidently...
Maybe they've reviewed it and it didn't happen during the course of the game. That's the only thing I can think that would justify.
It absolutely happened during the course of the game. It's not like it was halftime and he sort of...
No, but, like if the puck was up one end and there was an altercation down the other end between these two or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Or, if he'd fallen when he was hitting the puck, he'd fallen forward and this guy took a swing at him while he was down, but the puck was gone. Maybe something like that where it's not part of the game.
Well, but this is my point. That kind of stuff sort of is part of the game. It's not part of the rules, but it is the kind of thing you could expect when you're
drawing a distinction between what is, typically happening on a field as opposed to what is the course of the game. Like you say you could expect to be punched in a football game, it happens.
Yep.
Yes, that probably is true, but I don't know if that means if it went to court, you'd have an argument, well, it was in the course of the game. I don't know that what typically happens in a game is the same as the rules of the game.
Mm. Well, one of the things that the case in England has brought out is exactly that point. So the, lawyers sort of have gone back to look for appeal decisions. So decisions of courts of appeal obviously give greater precedent and value in terms of, to courts and police and prosecutors about how to deal with certain things. Looking for cases like that where there's been something from sport and there's been some prosecution because of it, and apparently there's very little to guide the police and the prosecutors on what to do because of this idea. I think exactly your point. It's maybe it is criminal, but people take it as part of the game, part of the culture of the game.
Yeah.
Well, that's just what you can expect. And so charges aren't brought, but maybe charges should be brought.
Well, I think about footy. Like I have grown, my kids have grown up, the boys have played league since they were little.
Yep.
And I said to you before, I was the first aid officer.
Yep.
Terrifying position.
Yeah.
But last year in the under 18s game, one of the boys came off and his cheek had been sliced open.
Ooh.
And it was like bleeding, and I was like, mate, oh, this doesn't look good. I think you might need some stitches. He's like, nah, tape it up.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I don't know. Yeah, tape it up. I'm going back on there.
Yep.
So I taped his whole face. He looked like a mummy. And he's back out there throwing himself into the tackles again.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, technically that's that's not just bodily harm. We're talking about an injury that needs to be stitched.
Yes.
Maybe it happened in the course of the game, but you can't consent to, in Queensland, you can't consent to an injury beyond bodily harm, even in the course of the game. So a wounding or a grievous bodily harm, you can't consent to that. But of course, no one would ever think to say, well, which player caused that? Because we do just accept it. And it's the same with things like concussion. Like you get these massive tackles.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the boys on my son's team, who I love almost like a son, three concussions last year.
Yeah.
And this is serious. Like the consequences from that are massive. You talk to my colleague Annette Greenhow about the head injuries in sports. And I just think, well, of course, no one's ever going to hold anyone responsible for a king tackle, you know, like that's, wow, what a tackle. And meanwhile, he's over here not computing what's going on.
Yep.
And so I think maybe we have to shift that thinking and say, well, maybe we've expected it. And you said we've made progress since the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to go the next step and say, let's really be strict on what we would accept on a sports field.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's an opportunity cost to this kind of stuff. So there is, I mean, there's an exception in terms of consenting to assault for medical procedures. So obviously if you're having an operation, you are being cut open, which is a wounding, you know, and potential grievous bodily harm. So there's exceptions for medical procedures. And to some extent, there is, I think, an exception for sporting events, because there's a real public policy in encouraging people to play sport.
Yeah.
And I suspect that there would be a feeling that if you start to prosecute spear tackles that knock people out and you are then being prosecuted criminally for that.
Yeah, who'd do it?
You know, there would be less and less.
Who'd play the sport,
Who'd play the sport. But, I mean, you're exactly right. The medical evidence on repeated concussions now is, you know, showing that it has significant long-term effects. And when I looked at the sort of the deaths from, you know, rugby union, boxing, MMA, you know, not insignificant number of them die because of some brain injuries from repeated concussions.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is such a – I mean, it's a difficult area in terms of when to prosecute.
Well, and it's a difficult area in terms of the culture, because we had a protocol. Like, as a first aid officer, if I had a suspected concussion, it's a two-week protocol you have to put into place. And I would say to the parent, you know, Johnny's had – a concussion this game, you're gonna have to take him to a doctor, go back in a week and get approval the week after that.
Mm.
No, Johnny, no, you were right, weren't you? You didn't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, no, I couldn't answer. Johnny, were you right? Was it a concussion? No, Mum.
Yeah.
What do you do? They don't want to miss the next two weeks of games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that is a whole shift in thinking.
Mm. But, I mean, in some sense, I mean, I appreciate why in a medical sense you should draw a distinction between that and the kid you had who split his face open.
Mm.
But the idea of just tape me up, I'm going back on.
I know. You went against every fibre of my being.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this was my older son's team. I didn't really know these kids. I couldn't say, no, I'm not letting you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I can advise.
Yes.
But I'm they were adults, most of them.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of the blood bin has been something that's much more strictly policed now. I mean, as with the rise of an understanding around HIV, I think that's come in. But, I mean, you know, bleeding players immediately sent off, immediately, and that's treated. But then it provided the bleeding is sort of staunched and they're not bleeding on other players, they strike back,
come back on and
keep going.
Yeah, they get the tape and it's dribbling down.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can understand. I mean, I've seen... I mean, I know people who go and play in circumstances where I would never go back on. You know, they've split their head open. They need stitches. They won't stop to get stitches. It's like, put some Vaseline on it, tape it up, I'll go back on. I don't even know how they keep doing it. But, you know, they do. And so, you know.
Yeah, I know. I think the MMA stuff is super interesting, because that is like another level again, because it's intentional, you know, like it's
you're trying to knock the other person
out. It's not a consequence of rough play or enthusiastic play or whatever it might be. And so I mean, they obviously are all there because they want to compete.
Yeah.
But are they really understanding what they're...
The consequence, the potential, yeah. I mean, long-term, even if they... If they have a career, their long-term consequences, what are they consenting to in terms of the damage they could be potentially doing?
But, you know,
doing?
People say, well, it's not the law's job to make rules about this. This is decisions they should make for themselves. And I think, is it? I don't know.
Well, it's a tough one. I must say, I'd lean on the side of the idea that it's not the law's.
Well, I know they haven't legislated, but.
But, yeah. I mean, I think. Certainly reading this stuff around the young bloke who had his neck sliced open in an ice hockey game and the prosecution that's gone on from that, I suspect that we're going to see more and more prosecution of people
from sports. Yeah. Well, I think there was a hockey player who did face a charge for a death on the court.
Yeah.
And I know we were talking about this before, but I feel confident that when we were younger, there was a boy playing schoolboy football who did a spear tackle outside of the play of the ball.
Yes.
And he, I'm sure he got charged with manslaughter.
Yeah, yeah, we talked about this earlier. I tried to find the case because I remember it as well.
Mm.
Yeah, and it was, in a rugby union game.
And I mean, that is heartbreaking because how many spear tackles happen?
Yeah.
And for the one that he did to be fatal, I mean, that would not have been his intention in any way, shape or form. And he'd have to live with that forever.
Yeah.
So it is, it is something to really think about, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Are you going to go home and start watching MMA clips on your TikTok?
I might watch one, but I struggle with boxing. I can't watch boxing because to me it's everything I have raised my children not to do.
Yeah.
You know, don't. Wrestle like that. Don't hit. Don't.
Yes.
And I feel the impacts, you know, although having said that, one of my favorite series of books and now the TV show is the Lee Child Reacher series, Jack Reacher.
Yeah, I just
Not the Tom Cruise version.
No, yeah, the TV. Yeah, I've watched
where
both
he
of
actually
it. Yes.
is Jack Reacher. And honestly, the level of violence in those is
phenomenal.
Out of control.
Yeah.
But I would watch him all day.
It's violence porn. It's like the John Wick movies. It's just this violence strung together with a pretty terrible storyline.
Oh no, I love Lee Child's books. They're very good stories.
I must say, I did watch the second season of Reacher Network. I watched the first season too. The storylines
really
are pretty good.
Yeah. Really good. Yeah. The books are amazing.
Are they?
Yeah.
Maybe I should read them. There's a go. Big shout out to Lee Child.
Lee Child. He's handing over to his brother.
Is he?
Yeah. He's giving Jack Reacher to his brother's keeping.
Wow.
Anyway. Different kind of violence, but I can stomach that. I think not the sports violence so much.
Well, maybe you should watch WWF wrestling because that's really staged violence.
I think I'll stick with my netball and footy.
All right. Well, hopefully there's something to think about there. I hope I did it justice for my friend Simon.
Yeah,
I
hope
to talk
he's
about
happy.
MMA. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Thanks, Joe. That was some stuff I did not know.
Good. No, not at all. Thank you, Lizzie.
Have a good week.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into this episode. You can find links to the cases that we discussed in the description. You can also find a link to Guardian Criminal Law, and a big shout out to them for making this podcast possible.
The majority of criminal cases involve people, normal people, people like you, people like me, who find themselves in an unusual set of circumstances that would not usually occur in their life. My name's Mark Savick, and I'm here to assist you with your criminal matter. I look forward to hearing from you and being of assistance to you.
If you're interested in clips, you can look at them on Instagram and TikTok. Just search for Justice Matters Pod. See you next episode.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.